so good to have you guys here with us.
For having us. Thanks for coming out, everyone. It's great to see you all.
And it's exciting as well. You guys are saying, like, you recognise each people here, but there's some people you've never met, and that's fantastic. One of the goals tonight was to have a number of you who haven't had a time to have a meal with the Herpertis in the past come along, have a meal, get to know them. So I was pretty keen to start with actually getting to know you guys, realising many of us know you well, some of us know you really well, a lot of us know you a little bit. So let's just assume we know nothing about you guys to start off with. Now, you guys have grown up here in Adelaide. Can you tell us how you first became followers of Jesus?
Should I start?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was blessed to grow up in a Christian family. My dad was on staff at a Pentecostal church down in the west where I grew up. It was a very different church to what I have, you guys and many other churches I've been to since. But it did give me a foundation of, you know, Jesus and God and the importance of putting my faith in God. But yeah, as I grew up, I kind of experienced different Christians, and through the Christian students at uni, I kind of met Christians who did things a bit of a different way, and Christians who read books because they wanted to know more about Jesus, and even Christians who read their Bibles, which was quite novel to me as well. So yeah, that was really, really important in my personal faith walk, and it was a time when I kind of solidified what Jesus meant to me in my life personally, and it's just kind of gone from there.
Yeah, I think, like, I as well was blessed to grow up in a Christian home. My dad was a United Church minister, and we spent time out in the country and here in Adelaide as well. I'm blessed to say that I haven't known a day where I didn't know and love Jesus, and I'm super grateful for that. I think for me as well, there was a big sort of point in my life as I was finishing high school, studying uni, and just thinking, like, what am I doing with my life? You know, I'm not sure. And then I realized, like, oh yeah, I know Jesus is important. Like, and you know, I started like going along to Christian group at uni and that kind of thing, and just realized actually, like, following Jesus is the most important thing. Everyone needs to hear about Jesus, and you know, whether I end up being a scientist, like I was in science, a science degree at the time, whether I end up being a scientist who's a Christian or heading into ministry, like, I just want people to know Jesus. So.
Brilliant. Now, can you tell us a bit about how the two of you first met? And if you can remember, tell us how long ago that was. If you can remember, can you tell us also your first impressions of each other?
Sure. We were set up by a friend, actually, a mutual friend who I went to school with and Michael went to uni. Many of you know him, Mike Waskill. He can claim this. I told him one day that I wanted to marry a ringer, and he said, I know a guy. And so we got married. It's not that much more complicated than that. This was, 2010?
2011. Yeah.
Yes, the first time I ever met Malcolm, Michael introduced us, I was very excited to speak to him, and I said hi, and Malcolm basically said, I'm really busy, I can't talk to you, and walked off, which wasn't a great first impression, but I was pretty committed.
So at the time, I was running a quiz night, and I was in charge of it all, and I did want to talk to her, but I was really busy.
I don't know what else you want to say. Has that answered
your
question?
Follow-up question, first date?
What do you count as a first date?
Yeah.
We had a few, like, we hung out together as friends in groups a few times. Our first, like, date, I guess, was a beach walk from Grange to Glenelg and back.
Yes.
Where we talked about, like,
Everything.
And then after that, we were kind of set.
Yeah, I mean, we only dated for 10 weeks before we got engaged.
Okay.
And so, I think, you know, the long beach walk.
Yeah.
We got all the heavy stuff out of the way earlier. After that, it was just a formality.
So, at that formality, getting married, is overseas mission on the cards for both of you, one of you, neither of you? Like, as you're getting married, mission?
Yeah, I mean, not mission, not overseas mission specifically. We didn't go into marriage being like, right, the plan is we're going to do this, and this many years into our marriage, we're going to head overseas as missionaries. It was more just like we were open to, seeing, like, doing ministry, seeing where God would take that, whether that's full-time or not, and wherever God wants us to be or not. We had talked about how it would be interesting to go to South America. I think, like, we were both interested in that, and we were like, oh, yeah, that'd be fun.
Just, like, to travel.
Yeah, just to travel, you know, just to go over there and see what it's like. But, yeah, after that, as we were thinking about ministry, I think that's where we were really like, oh, actually, you know, like, we're willing to serve God anywhere. Like, where would he have us serve? I think, so it was something that kind of we were always open to, partially because as young marrieds, it's like we didn't really, there was too many options, you know, where it could hit everything. But no, but it was something that sort of grew over time. Yeah.
Are you able to pinpoint something for us about that? How did God get you both to the point of, being committed to overseas mission?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've already told you that our decision-making processes are short. We got engaged after 10 weeks of dating. So we tend to be a bit like, that sounds good, and just do stuff. Which, again, it's kind of how we ended up. Not really. It's a longer story than that. But we both wanted to travel. We both wanted to go to South America. Early on in our marriage, that was like the big holiday we did before having kids. We went to South America. Malcolm's family had a family friend who was a missionary in Chile at the time. We didn't know her, and we, like, they said we should stay with her. We're like, is this going to be weird? Let's call her up and stay with this missionary we didn't know. She's also here tonight,
yeah.
Frances. and so Frances was keen to host us. We went to, like, just on the, at the end of our trip, we spent a couple of days in Santiago. She took us to the SEP. We were like, this is great. We had no intention, like, didn't think anything of it. And then kind of over the years, Malcolm and Frances ended up in a Bible college subject together. And so she just started sliding into his emails, like, come consider Chile, like, in the future. And we weren't really considering cross-cultural mission at the time, but then when we did start considering it, it was like, oh, well, I guess we, you know, we like South America.
Yeah.
There's this option there. And so it kind of came hand in hand with, like, over time, as we became more and more convinced that this was what we were doing, it was hand in hand with the Chile thing as well. So.
Yeah.
It's beautiful just to hear how God grew that clarity for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I want to chime in and ask, once you were thinking, okay, overseas, why CMS in particular? There's lots of great ways to get overseas on mission. What was it about CMS that kind of drew you in?
Yeah, I think you're right. There are a lot of great mission organisations. I think one of the things that really struck us about CMS was the long-term vision of mission and how, change is affected over a long period of time, and really to be effective in mission, you need to go somewhere, you need to learn the language and the culture and really get to know people, because real gospel connections are made through relationships. And getting to know the people and working alongside them for a long period of time, you know, CMS would say at least sort of 10 years, which, you know, when you're in your early 20s, it's like, whoa, like 10 years? You know, like when I applied for uni, I remember selecting science and not even thinking about a med degree, because it was like, that's like 6 years. I would never want to be at uni that long.
And then how many years did you end up at
I
uni?
Don't want to say how long I was at uni. But yeah, it's true, you know, and I think that was something that we were really encouraged about and really agreed with. And in fact, CMS will say, you know, like, people really, missionaries usually hit their stride and start doing effective ministry after about the 5 year mark. So, you know, you're already halfway through your first 10 years and so doing effective ministry in a cross-cultural way that really actually encourages the church rather than causes more harm is something that takes a long period of time.
But the second part of why CMS is also the care and the support that CMS gives. So they don't just send you, like, see you in 10 years, like, on your own. There's a lot of training, a lot of support, a lot of walking alongside us that we have experienced and we've seen in other CMS missionaries, which is one of the reasons we selected to go, like, we're interested in going with them. CMS puts a lot of importance on this long-term mission, which means they want to make sure that you're not going to burn out or feel isolated or unprepared or uncared for. And so we have, you know, we have a pastoral care visit every single year where someone from CMS comes and spends a few days with us and has a look at our life and how we can better care for ourselves during ministry and for our family while we're in this other country. We're really encouraged to stay on top of our spiritual health, our mental health, our physical health, and there's things in place for us to do that as well. It means a lot of paperwork so that we can stay on top of it, but it does mean that we never feel alone or unprepared or uncared for. It's really a partnership.
That's amazing. I never knew up until we caught up a couple of weeks ago that, like, CMS is checking in on you. Like, how are you going? Your physical, are you looking after yourself?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's amazing. And it really strikes me, hearing from you guys, you're willing to make, like, a big decision and don't need heaps of run-up time for that necessarily, but actually that doesn't mean that you're not committed to doing things for the long haul. That's really encouraging. I've heard that part of the way CMS prepares you for that long-term kind of view of mission is a thing called St. Andrew's Hall, a place called St. Andrew's Hall.
Yeah.
Could you give us just a little window in to what happens there?
So St. Andrew's Hall is a cross-cultural institution, which makes it sound very formal. It's basically a place in Melbourne where CMS missionaries, before they go to location, go for training. And so you live together in a residential kind of beautiful building right across the road from the zoo with other people who are about to go out as CMS missionaries all over the world. So we had a group of, I think, 7 or 8 units going, many of them going to Europe, some of them going to Northern Australia or to Central Asia, Middle East. And so we spent 6 months living with these guys, sharing every single meal with them, and then during the day being taught by past missionaries and people who are experienced in cross-cultural work, teaching us many different methods of how we can effectively minister in a cross-cultural environment, but also like how we can cross cultures in a way that is respectful to the people that we're going to minister to. They call it vulnerable mission, where we go in as learners. They say, you're not there to save the day. Like you're a learner, you go in, you need to ask for help. You need to let them teach you what's happening before you can kind of do anything. And so it really sets you up well for long-term mission. But also like super interesting classes, really helpful stuff. I don't know, Malcolm might comment.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I mean, I think if everybody could do it, it would be great because, I mean, Australia is such a multicultural place as well. But yeah, we talk about mission and culture, obviously, but even stuff like working through conflict in relationships, personal care and stuff like that. Obviously, a little bit about, you know, acquiring languages and the best way to go about that and... Yeah, I mean, there's a whole range of stuff.
Some of the guys who went to, like, more rural areas got, like, four-wheel drive training. Yeah. And they went and did, like, a four-wheel drive training weekend, which is, like, pretty fun. We didn't get that. We're in a city.
I was so glad we didn't get that. We should have been like, but we might go
on
sometime.
Hey, as you reflect on that kind of process of preparing to go overseas to serve Jesus, what would you say to someone in the room who might be thinking, like, I love the idea of serving Jesus with my life in some way, maybe not here, but feels like I could never get there. What would you say to that person?
You can get there.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I think about us, like, we're just people who love Jesus and we're available. I mean, that's it. Like, honestly, if you're available and you're willing to serve Jesus anywhere, I think it's an easy consideration. You know, like, there are organizations like CMS willing to help you get there and go other places. So yeah, I think, is there anything else you want to say?
Yeah. I mean, like we said, you're not, like, we didn't go alone with no prep or planning or anything. We are very much supported in how we're going. We're very prepared by CMS to go. We are just normal Christian, honestly, when we left, we were kind of like a frazzled family with four really small kids. And like we managed to do it. Yeah, I think feeling not prepared or like feeling like it's not, like you're not ready, I think, that's only, you can only get ready. I think there's room to grow, I think, in that area.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love Jesus and available. One of the risks of putting on a night like this is that Tonzi and CLG might have to farewell more members. So that is something we're willing to consider. So I'm just putting it out there. Actually, given what we've been talking about, it's something we have to consider and actually encourage. So thank you. As you sort of got closer to heading on the road overseas, or in the air, I guess, technically, why Chile? Why were you so excited to go to that part of God's world? We've heard a little bit of the backstory with Francis, but yeah, tell us a bit about your heart for going there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, as well as, you know, having a bit of familiarity with South America, like, we were really excited about the idea of working in theological education, which we'll talk about in a minute, and there was a college there and stuff, but I think, like, actually, I don't know. What else would you say about
during our like pre-kids trip to South America, we spent like, we just loved, there was something that just filled our hearts when we were there, in this area of the world. And there was one day that we went to this massive basilica in Ecuador, and it was like so like not op health and safety. You could climb up whatever weird ladder, whatever bridge you wanted to, and like these huge tall things. And we came across like a cafe up there. And we bought the most delicious hot chocolates, and we sat there for almost like 3 hours just talking about, you know, at this point of our marriage and our lives where we didn't have any kids, and we're thinking about having kids soon, and what are we going to do in the future, and what's our life going to look like. And we were just looking out over the city thinking we'd love to come back here at some point to like to this part of the world to serve God in, or to in whatever capacity that we could. And so I feel like, you know, South America had been on our hearts for like since then,
yeah.
And not knowing what was to come. And so when opportunities came up with CMS and our connection with Francis, it really just like all the puzzle pieces came together.
We'll come to this a little bit later on, but it's been so lovely hearing you guys talk about the people you've met, the relationship you've formed, just the incredible heart you now have for the place that is home for you guys. But we'll get to that in a moment. When we talk about people going overseas on mission, we might be thinking about four drivers into you know, random villages, you know, getting out, preaching to burning village, moving on to that. Like, we often have an idea about what missionaries should or, you know, should be doing. But theological education does perhaps jar with how we often assume mission should or should look. So if we wind the clock back 3 years ago, we had a night like this, and we asked you, yeah, why theological education? We'll get to the how it played out, but just can you refresh us in, like, What is the strategy behind this? What's the significance of going overseas to do theological education? What's going on there?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, because it does seem a little bit weird. It's like not the traditional like missionary thing. It's like, oh yeah, sending us over to lecture in a Bible college seems a bit, I don't know, almost a bit boring. but it's actually, I think it's a really strategic way to support the church over there, because ultimately, mission, God's mission is about the local church. The local church being in the community, and of course, every local church needs a well-trained and equipped leader. And I mean, you could send people like us to go and lead a church in somewhere like Santiago, but honestly, I feel like we'd be doing everyone there a disservice. and I often say this to the students in the SEP as well, actually. I say, like, you guys are better equipped to go and preach the good news of Jesus in Chile than what we are. And it kind of surprises them, because, like, yeah, but you're, like, our teacher, you know? And in a way, that's true, but also, like, they know the language and the culture better than we do, or we could, even if we lived there, you know, 10 more, 20 more, 30 more years, like Francis did. And us being at the college actually enables more people to be trained up than what we could do if we were just working in one local church. So actually, Yeah, it sort of has a multiplying effect of being able to encourage, equip, train people to go out and to do the real ministry in the local church, telling people about Jesus, discipling people, growing people in their faith, and all that stuff.
Brilliant. Like, that's such a strategic, such a wise use of your life to be investing. So, again, a multiplying kind of way to go. Hey, I reckon now's the point to have a brief break for maybe 3 minutes. We'll run a tight clock on it. 3 minutes, if you'd like to pass on a bar, really, thanks, grab another drink, visit the bathroom, just stretch your legs for a moment. We're going to come back and hear more about life now. So there's a backstory they've, I think, convinced us we should listen on. How's it going? What's up next?
Yeah. Great. Isn't it good to spend some quality time hearing stories face to face? Beautiful. I'm going to keep the conversation going. We're going to talk a bit more about kind of life now, you know, how it's all going. I'd love to get the ball rolling just by asking, I imagine there are some challenges living in a different culture, kind of being beginners, being learners. What are some of the challenges of living in a different culture and language that have kind of hit you guys, struck you guys over the past few years?
I'm not going to talk about this for a long time. I think the challenges are different in each season. I think when we first arrived, it was just a lot of like confusion. We didn't, like, nothing worked for us. We kept trying to, like, we didn't have the right bank cards or like money, and like that was weird. And we were trying to furnish our house, and we had this whole story where we like went to buy furniture and like we paid for it and we ordered a delivery date, and then they just never delivered it. And we were waiting and waiting, and then we went back and they're like, oh, we didn't have this number you needed, and they were just not going to tell us. And it was just like just stuff like that that was just really confusing and weird.
Yeah.
But then the challenges get more like different, you know, late, you know, about 6 months in, we were like struggling with visas, which was just more paperwork stuff. But then you kind of get into the, we've been here for long enough that we want to have friends, but our language still isn't quite there, or we're still a bit confused by this event, we don't really know what's happening. And so I think there's just a lot of that kind of questioning yourself. Like, I found like quite a big loss of identity over there. I actually have a different name in Spanish. Everyone calls me Ana because Ainsley just doesn't work. And Ana is very quiet and doesn't say much in social situations and gets quite anxious in crowds, which is not Ainsley at all. And so I found that quite challenging, you know, having to come to terms with my identity as Ainsley is someone who does the work in a conversation, and I'm quite an open book. You know, people have said that you don't have to talk to me for long to feel like, you know, that you know me very well, but Ana is just a completely different personality because of the language and the lack of confidence. And so that, for me, has been a really big challenge. And that kind of, yeah, as the time goes on, that challenge looks different, and you know, I've come to terms with it a bit, but like, yeah, it's still like a quite a big thing to need to face over 3 years, I think. And actually, it has taught me a lot that my identity is not in how comfortable I can make a conversation, but in Christ and in like who I am as a saved person, and all of that other stuff doesn't matter. But that's another whole thing.
Wow. Yeah. Is there anything you
want to add? Yeah, I mean, I guess on a cultural note as well, there's plenty of things that can be challenging. I remember like early on, like we knew that people used to would like hang around longer at events, and so we thought like we'll stay longer, but really we would stay a bit longer and then try and leave, and people would still be like, why are you going? We're like halfway through this event. Even though we felt like we stayed extra long.
We were tired.
Yeah, we're tired, the kids are tired. And like, yeah, I think the funniest one of those was that at the end of every year, there's a day called a paseo, which is where you go out with your like church community. There's also one for every year of school. Like, so, you know, the boys are in grade one, there'll be a grade one paseo, there'll be a grade 3 one for June's class, grade 5 one for
Elsa's
class.
Like an end of year breakup.
Yeah, like an end of year breakup. But instead of being, you know, like 90 minutes in the park after school, it'll be like the whole day. So we have like, you know, 3 weekends in a row where there's paseos. We had like, yeah, 3 weekends with 5 paseos, like all day, you know? And the church, by the way, they're great. Once you're there, it's stressful organizing, but once you're there, it's like, yes, you know, we're here, we will relax. There's a pool usually at the place that they hire. But yeah, the funniest one for us was like when we went to our church one, and then, you know, everyone had been having lunch, and then we were like, oh, it feels like about time to leave, you know, it was 4 o'clock or something like that. We'd been there since, I don't know, 10 or something. But like, and we saw people getting up and moving off, and like, oh, maybe there are people leaving. But no, they were going off to take a nap. You know? Take a nap halfway through the event, then come back and like join in the conversation again. Totally acceptable, because you're gonna be hanging out all day, like, you know. And sometimes people do that, like if you're comfortable with people at their house, they'll be like, yeah, go take a nap if you're tired, come, no problem. So it's interesting. Like a siesta isn't really a thing in Chile, but sometimes people will go and take a nap at a social event if they're tired.
Wow.
Like, come back and join in again.
This is why you ask me, do people nap in the office? If anyone is getting tired, the door is open.
That's right.
Can you share something in all of that the past few years? What's something you've learned about God over the past few years?
Yeah, I think a big one is like His timing is not our timing. I mean, I know that like we say that, but it's something that we have really, internalized a lot more and experienced. There's been plenty of times when we're just like frustrated or annoyed by something, you know, like for those who've journeyed with us on this and been praying for us, you know that our visas took a really long time to come. Like before we went to Chile, they were like, the people at the embassy here were like, yeah, it'll take like 90 days. No,
is
like
it
30,
10 or 20 days?
10 or 20 days for your visa to come through. And it was a process of like, I don't know, a year and a half or 2 years. So we, as part of that, we were exiled from Chile for about 5 months in Argentina. And that was a really tough time, I think, like just not knowing how long we were going to be there for. And I think it did teach us a lot, like as well as, you know, we made some good links and have friends over there in Argentina now, which is really lovely. But it sort of, you know, it taught us we really do have to rely on God. Like there's literally nothing else we can do. We rely on Him. We ask people to pray for us. And He got us through, and I think it was His timing. We made it back in time for the next semester to start, for me to start teaching at the SEP in person, because otherwise I would have been teaching online, which for a first semester of teaching in Spanish would have been pretty rough. Yeah, so there's a lot of God's provision, but in His timing.
I was going to say, I keep thinking we've done the work on this. Like, you know what? I've really been challenged in this season of my life to trust in God and rely on God. Like, not take control, and I've done the work on it, and, like, I'm good. And then, like, the next thing will happen, and it's just learning that again, and it's learning that again. And I'm sure it'll happen, and I'll need to learn it again. And I just keep thinking I've done it, but God keeps throwing stuff at me. And this is not to say, like, it's been bad and terrible, but it's just one of those things that we've had to keep. Like, God's just kept showing us over and over again that... like it's nothing is in our hands, and it feels more comfortable knowing that it's in God's hands than trying to hold it in our own.
Thanks, guys. The kind of experience of having little children, moving to a different continent with them, 4 young, wonderful children, full of energy. What's that experience been like?
It's been great.
Yeah.
Again, I could talk about this for a long time. That's one of the big things that we considered, you know, parents do consider when making decisions like this for their family. They didn't choose to go to Chile, they just got caught up in it. We made that decision. Oh, I will say we convinced them it was their idea so that they didn't feel so mad at us when we first told them we were coming. Yeah, you do that. You like put the idea in their heads, and then they say, oh, Daddy could teach at this Bible college that needs a teacher. Oh, that's such a good idea. Maybe Daddy should.
Let's do it. Yeah.
So anyway, yes, it's been, for them, it's been really good. I mean, there's obvious things like they're bilingual, they've, you know, got this ability to cross cultures and all of that. But I think they've grown, we've seen so much growth in them, in their like resilience and their ability to see God at work through things when, you know, it's impossible for us to hide from them all of the stuff that we're experiencing, you know, in these, when we're stuck in Argentina or whatever. They know people are praying for us. They know that we're sending prayer points. They know that we have people lifting us up and supporting us, and like they can see God working in very real situations, which I think is really precious for them. There's something else. I also think that because we've done this huge move as a family, their relationships with their siblings, like their brothers and sisters, is like really positive and good because they're the only ones who know what they're experiencing, which is like really nice for us to see like coming together as a family unit in Chile. Actually, is been the best for our family, and like we're better parents, I think, to them because of this thing we've gone through together. I'm so proud of them. I think they've done so amazingly, and I think they're the best.
I guess what I'm hearing is like the best parenting advice would be to families move to Chile. Like it sounds like
it gives you a challenge to overcome as a family, and like to do that together and to
it's great.
It's great. It's an opportunity.
Yeah.
I do think so.
There we go. It's something to take home to families and touch through tomorrow morning. We heard before about your sort of reasons for theological education, some of the strategy, the thinking there. Perhaps can you just tell us how it's going? We've heard the strategy, but you know, as it played out, just sort of hoping, perhaps a few stories of the ways you've sort of seen God at work through set.
Yeah, sure. It's worked out perfectly. We are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, as with any ministries, of course, they're up and down, but there have been some really big encouragements. I mean, I've only been teaching at the SEP for 2 years now, which, you know, it doesn't, in some ways it doesn't feel like very long, in other ways it feels like a long time. Even with the students who are currently there at the moment, there have been some huge encouragements. One of the students there, Seba, is Sebastian. He's super keen on mission and is constantly thinking about the broader global picture, much like many mission-minded people here are, and is thinking about like, oh man, like there are so many people in, you know, India who don't know Jesus and need to hear about Jesus. Like, how are we going to mobilize people? And like, thinking about all those big questions as well, which has been really encouraging. Another thing that I found really encouraging was, you might ask me about that later. another current student at the moment, a guy called Luis, he's got two young kids, and him and his wife are thinking of eventually heading out to plant a church in an area that's, where there are no other evangelical churches. So it's like really exciting stuff to see people who are just excited for Jesus, who are, you know, at the SEP, they're pretty, it's a pretty intense program that they go through, that we put them through, but see them like not only getting deep in the word and in church history and learning Greek and things like that, but forming relationships that are going to last through ministry. And you still see it with like the SEP graduates, you know, who graduated like 10 years ago or something. You can tell who were in the same cohort, because when you come to the big, you know, like synod meetings where all the pastors get together, they'll just be like, hey, and like, you know, big hugs and like chatting about ministry, like, how's it going over there? And like, it's just really lovely to see the support and like brotherly love that is built in a Bible college, people working together to make Jesus known, you know?
Things like literature and things like church history, theology, like sometimes like it's hard for us to kind of imagine how does that translate to to churches running well. Like, it's just
like
walk us through some of the ways in which the students are better prepared to go and share the gospel, and in the context they're in as well. How does that kind of play out?
I think it's a totally valid question. I think especially with something like church history, it's like, well, just history in general, people are usually a bit like, you either love it or you hate it, and people get really bored. And like, I understand it on one level, but I actually find it not only fascinating, but super helpful for ministry for so many reasons. So This was the story I was going to mention a second ago. Seba as well told me only a month or so ago, there was a non-believer who he was talking to about Jesus in church and stuff, just had a whole bunch of questions, and he was like, oh my gosh, we literally just talked about this in our church history and doctrine classes. And like, could answer this guy who, you know, who was not a Christian, like had legit questions about Jesus that were kind of, was unsure about regarding faith. And in that moment, he felt equipped from something we had just covered in our classes. And that was exciting for me because I was like, yes, he listened in the classes. I'm so glad. But to see that being put into practice straight away is just so encouraging. And yeah, and I think just given the cultural history as well of Chile, there's loads of people with questions like, so, you know, like a lot of people have some kind of nominal Catholic background, and they'll just be a bit like, so what is, like, what is church? What do you mean when you say church? What do you mean when you talk about Jesus? Because they know that Protestant churches are kind of a bit different, but like, what is that even? And a lot of those distinctives are really important, especially when it comes to there being, you know, Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses around as well. So having good, clear teaching on doctrine, on history, on reading the Bible well. There's a guy coming to our church at the moment who is, he's a German guy, his name's David, but he's not a Christian, and he's a bit like, oh, I don't know if I want to come on a Sunday because, like, you know, I have to send my kids into the kids program, I don't know what they're teaching them, you know, it might be weird. So he started coming along to, like, the weekly men's training night, which is just, like, our pastor, like, teaching very, very well, but, like, you know, very exegetical, going through the book of Romans, like, brilliant Bible teaching, straight
from...
Set graduate, straight from the set, you know, teaching through Romans. And this unbelieving guy is just, like, amazed. Every week, like, he's just, like, he's got all the questions, and basically, you know how, like, in Romans, Paul is, like, what shall we say then? You know, all those questions, he's, like... David just has all of those questions lined up, you know, like ready to go. Like, but what about this? And then there's all these like Christians in the room being like, oh my gosh, I never thought about like that before. Just says it, you know. So not only people, you know, being discipled more, but also people coming to know Jesus through the training that they receive. Yeah.
That is so good. So thank you for kind of reminding us how when we pray for you guys, when we support you guys, we are helping the truth of the gospel get into people's lives. That's just beautiful to just put flesh on that.
Yeah.
So encouraging. You've just touched on your church. Sounds like it's been like one of the great things about being over there has been church. Tell us a bit about kind of what church is like. Is it similar? Is it different? Give us a bit of a vibe.
Yeah, so our church is excellent. It's called Puente Alto, which is
Iglesia
Puente in the suburb of Puente Alto. But Puente means bridge, so it's like bridge church, which I think has landed into a great church name. our church is great. When we arrived in Chile, we got assigned to this church by the bishop at the time. We didn't get a choice. And we probably wouldn't have chosen it because it's quite a long way from where we live. We live close to our kids' school because we're going back and forth all day. And our church is kind of in the very southern part of the city, in like a lower socioeconomic area. But God knew what he was doing because it is such a beautiful, wonderful church, and we just love going there. It's grown so much since we arrived. So we got there and there's like 8 kids in this like dingy little like shed. But now I think it's like 3 times as big as it was, and many of those are from new believers who have like joined the church from being invited by their neighbors or their workmates or whatever. And people are so keen to evangelize the neighborhood, and just everyone's just like telling everyone that, oh, my friend fought with her daughter, I'm just going to evangelize her, or like this guy is on the corner like with a telescope, let's talk to him about God. And like it's just really like everyone is just, it's like that, those are two very true stories. And so like there's just like a real like momentum in going on in the church at the moment, which we're really grateful to see. because like that kind of new, like it's a reasonably new church plant as well. Like when we got there, it was a few years old. So anyway, we have a lot of warmth and the community's beautiful and they're very welcoming to us. It's very similar in the way that they love God and want to serve God and want to evangelize their neighborhoods, just like everyone here does. There's a bit more like clapping and like, you know,
moving around
during the songs. There's like some actions that happen. There's one song that someone played and everyone was like, I turn around and everyone's like dancing, like this dance, they're like moving around. And I obviously missed the memo on what this song was or what the moves were. And I was like, I just want to take a video.
It was a classic song.
Yeah, I think it was like a 90s song that was like taking everyone back to like childhood. So like, yeah, it's really great. We really love it. And it's also very robust in its like discipleship. There's training for men and women during the week, every single week. There's discipleship groups, there's mission groups. People are getting together a lot. And because there's so many new Christians, I think it's helpful to kind of get them into like smaller groups where they can really dig into the Bible.
Mm.
We love our church. It's great.
Amazing. That's beautiful. I love how there's such a through line in terms of people trying to work out how to share the gospel with people around them. It's like,
yeah,
that really resonates here and there, even though it looks really different. And
yeah,
yeah, I haven't seen anyone tell us about that. If I do, I'll make a beeline. It sounds like, though, like lots of ups and downs the last few years.
Yeah, we have been without a building. So
yeah,
we, because we have had such growth in the church, we were using a tape-style building. And then one day on a Thursday, they said, this Sunday's your last week, you can't meet here anymore. Which, I mean, it really is at risk of losing the momentum of a growing church. But we met in a park for a little while. It's like going to a wedding every Sunday morning. We're like out in the park singing. And at the moment, we're meeting in another church's building, but early in the morning at 9 o'clock, which is like asking an Australian to go to church at 7 or 6 o'clock in the morning. But they're coming because they love it.
Wow.
But we've recently got a property in the neighbourhood now, like in the centre of the kind of the hub of the community that our church is reaching to. And by the time we get back, there'll be a building that we can meet in. So yeah,
yeah,
we're really grateful for that God's answered our prayer in that.
Praise God. That is wonderful.
Yeah.
You've had building issues, you've had visa chaos, lots of cultural lessons. Can you still look us in the eye and tell us that we should be doing this too?
Yes, I can. I mean, obviously tonight we've talked like a lot about the challenges, the blessings of doing this work. I think, we all have the Bible. It says that we're all called to share the gospel to the ends of the earth. And I think that's for every single one of us. It's for us, it's for you guys, it's for every one of us. We acknowledge that that doesn't look the same for every single person, but I think everyone should consider, like, why not? You know, why not go to full-time vocational ministry, and why not do it in a cross-cultural way? There might be a very good reason why not for you. There wasn't for us. It's much easier to, you know, it's to ask ourselves why not. It was hard for us to rule it out. If we had to go, oh, why should we go? That would have been a harder thing to come up with. But why not go? I mean, there's no good reason, so off we went. And I think, you know, looking at things in, yeah, like kind of, we're all called to go. I mean, you probably can say this better.
No, I think that was pretty good. Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of times, yeah, we like, when we're looking for God's guidance, especially on big things, a big change like this, we're usually like, oh, you know, it's like the stars have to align and you need to have some specific sign, but I'm going to put out a fleece and, you know, like that kind of stuff. But really, I mean, we're called to go to the nations. Like Jesus has told us, go make disciples of all nations. And so, yeah, I think for us, it was really like, well, why wouldn't we go there? And especially, this was like one of the things for us. We were already sort of on a path towards vocational ministry, and we were thinking about maybe we could do ministry here in Adelaide. And one of the options was Chile, obviously. Yeah, and someone wiser than us said to us, well, you know, look at your cohort at Bible College. There are a bunch of people who are willing to stay here, but how many other people are thinking of going to Chile? And we're like, oh, yeah, it's really just us at the moment. I mean, not to say, you know, that like like doing ministry in Adelaide is super important and great, but I think there's the question there for all of us. And if all of us go through thinking about, is it me? Is God calling me to head overseas? When, you know, if you come to the conclusion, actually, no, God's called me to be here, then you think about, oh, God has called me to be here, and I'm on mission here, and what does that mean for me to be here? And so, you know, then you can think like, oh, well, I can still support the overseas mission. I can't go there, but I can support the ministry in Chile, or perhaps one of the other CMS missionaries, or, you know, other partners that you have might be on your heart. You know, you can be a part of that ministry without going there. And the best way to do that, yes, consider, am I going there, or am I supporting those who are going there?
But then
the bonus of that all is it's actually great. Like, we love our life in Chile, and we, you know, I would say, you know, I'm a better parent, I'm a better wife, I think I'm a better friend. I've been challenged in ways that I would never have been if we hadn't have gone. I think I've grown personally. I've seen things that God has done. I think as much as we're all called to go, like, actually, selfishly, it's been great for us to go as well. So
it's been a blessing.
Yeah, we've been blessed.
Praise God for that. And as Jamie said, it is a, you know, tongue-in-cheek, a risk that we might end up leaving our wonderful church. But as you guys are talking about those who are committed to staying in Adelaide, like, I think, yeah, like, forever, how long I'm a pastor at Tonsley,
yeah.
Like, I don't know, Jamie's similar, like, a huge part of our job is to send people. If we're going to stay, it's to send.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like, go. It's kind of on the back of that with a church that want to send and support and encourage and partner with great work happening all around the world. On the theme of partnership then, so we've covered backstory, we've talked about how things are going. I know there's thousands more things we could talk about in that sort of category, but I just wanted to move, I guess, more to a partnership. And yeah, on that theme of we are all involved, and we're all here in Adelaide, but we can have an incredible ministry through you guys in partnership with you in prayer. God doesn't actually need us to do any of this, but he gives us an incredible privilege of being involved in his work and mission in such a key way. So just to turn to partnership, love to hear, throughout all the ups and downs, all the great times, how have you guys felt loved and supported through partnership with those here in Adelaide or elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's been invaluable to us to know that we are gone but not forgotten, and we're not sent, but you guys are with us.
Mm.
And we have really, really felt that over the last 3 years since we've gone. We've talked about the support that CMS gives on, like, preventing burnout and self-care and spiritual care and stuff like that. But knowing that there are people who love us and who love Chile and who love the people that we love in Chile is something that really encourages us because it can be quite isolating, I guess, sometimes, you know, the time difference, everyone's sleeping when we're awake, like... You know, it can feel like quite an isolating thing, but yeah, like knowing that when we ask for prayer, people are going to pray, and then seeing seeing God work through those prayers, you know, it sounds it is very, very real and very concrete to us to see that happening.
Hmm.
What was your whole question?
How have you guys helped love?
Oh, yeah.
So what sort of spurred you on?
Yeah, so knowing that's happened, how do we know that's happened? I mean, people keep in touch with us. We send out emails every month and, you know, sometimes people write back to them saying, we're praying for you. There's like a few people who write back to every single email, and it's like just encouraging knowing this. Yes, there's some like people there just reading them, they're praying for us. And we send out videos, people watch them, you know, get a bit more of an idea of kind of what we're doing and, you know, do they care about it, hopefully. We've had some churches send, like, cards, like the kids' churches have made cards and we've sent them over, and our kids have got them knowing that they're also not forgotten. We've received some videos. A couple of our churches sent, like, a package of, like, English books and, like, Australian Milo, which is, like, pretty special as well. So yeah, I mean, we know that the prayer is happening, that the support is happening, and like sometimes we get little like practical, like tangible ways of getting that, which is encouraging too, but it's all great. We definitely feel like loved.
You may have already covered this, it's fine if we already just repeat something I ended up saying, but what do you wish everyone knew about life out on the mission field? Like, is, you know, here we are here in Adelaide, what do you just wish we kind of got, or obviously, if you haven't already come with that?
Yeah. Did you have an answer, please?
It's fine, then.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because I don't know, I kind of wish that, like, you could all just come there and see everything. I don't know, like, it's yeah, not because not because of anything particular or special, but just because, like, there's such a deep, I don't know, I think, relational connection here between the church here and the church in Chile. And we'd really love you just meet all the people we're talking about. Because,
yeah.
Like, you know, like, it's one thing to say, like, oh, there's this guy and he said this. But, like, if we could, you know, I just wish you could or just meet them all. They're so nice and, like, oh, it'd just be so great. And, you know, everyone's got the same heart for Jesus. I think that's probably the hardest thing. Like, we try and get it across in emails and videos, and we do our best to try and convey everything, but I think that's probably the hardest thing, is just it is a relational connection, and, like, yeah, and when you're praying for us and you know, if you financially partner as well, like, you really are directly, you know, training up specific people to go work in the churches there. And
so it's like the middleman.
Yeah, we're kind of just the middleman. You know, like, it's not, you know. And so I really wish there was a way to make that a bit more obvious, or, you know, that you could meet everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, the quality of your videos are excellent. You do get a sense of that as your videos come through. You get to meet people. And so your time as a student minister during COVID wasn't wasted. The video editing skills have been put to good use.
The way that my back was thrown out during puppets behind
me. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That was all good times. What are we talking about? Okay, this is tongue-in-cheek here, but, like, I think you've already perhaps answered, but, like, For those of us partnering with you, or, you know, there's cards on the table tonight, for those who aren't, you know, yet signed up to partner with you guys, what's in it for us? You know, how do we benefit from this, this deal?
Well, if you're at the silver subscription level...
No!
What's in it for you guys? Yeah, I mean,
What is in it for you?
I love getting videos from you guys. I love your emails. I think there's, because I know you and I know the kind of ways you are seeking to serve Jesus. I love hearing about it, and I love getting something. I would say it's tonsy regular. I think it's great getting something in your inbox that's actually encouraging. You don't have to, like, do anything about it. You just stop and pray and thanks God for the work He's doing. Like, that's really good for our hearts, isn't it, to get an email like that? And that's been a huge thing for, like, I've just loved it, hearing what God's doing.
It's a blessing for our kids to know the Purdies, that when we were leaving tonight, they're like, oh, the Purdies, you know. They were carrying around pictures of you today. We've got new ones, we've got new cars on the fridge now. But it's a blessing for them to know that there are followers of Jesus doing what you guys are doing, and that might be something they could do one day. There are kids about their age, a bit older, who are having this massive adventure for Jesus. That's a blessing.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, the cars have our faces on them, but I'd love them to have the faces of their, like, set students on them. I think, like, if you say, like, what's in it for you guys, for us, I think it's the faces of the Chileans who come to know Christ through the students who are trained well at the set, and meeting them in heaven, and knowing that, like, your support of us is that reward. I think, like, and it's not even of us, it's of the gospel, and it's of the students, and it's of the set, and all the things that we are privileged to be a part of. You know, I think, yeah, emails are fine sometimes. They're better than other times. The videos, Malcolm puts a lot of effort in. We love sending them. But I think really, like, what I would love is for, like the Chileans' happy faces in heaven because they came to know Christ.
Yeah.
And the Bolivians and Argentinians and all the people that got reached because there was a good pastor who was well-trained.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
What a great investment, right? That's like the best use of a dollar I could think of. I know, like, since you guys have left here in Australia, costs have skyrocketed, like, in all kinds of mission work around the world, but I mean, you're sharing how like there's cost of living crisis that predated COVID in Chile in a way. We think it's been tough in Australia, cost of living, but like sounds tough. But the way that's meant is, I think you guys are 65% supported or thereabouts in the last kind of communication. And one of the things we'd love to see over the next 6 months for Perry's back is to send them back fully supported financially. Wouldn't that be a great prayer and a great thing to be part of? To responding to what we're hearing tonight generously and putting that dollar to that sort of eternal work.
Just chime in and say, I don't know if you're like me, we've been supporting the Purdy's financially since I think we sent them out. It's been on my mind that it would be good to, like, given all of the changes in cost of living, I know that they need more support. I'm like, it would be good to revisit our giving to the Purdy's sometime, and I haven't actioned anything for quite some time. But I've been thinking, when they're here, that is, I can't think of a more tangible sign that it's time to rethink it. So for us, like, this week's the week to be like, what are we going to do? Isn't it great to have that physical, in-person reminder? That's just my little confession to you. I don't know if you're anything like me, but do join me in that if that is you.
Jamie was sharing that with me. Oh, that's so good. I think, because I struggle with indecision. I don't know if anyone else... Don't put up your hands. The easiest thing in the world is to make no decision or delay that decision to next time. So what we should do is actually send out an email 7 days from now. Give you guys a 7-day challenge, as it were, to make a decision about either keeping your support levels financially for the Purdy's the same. That's a decision you need to make. I'm going to keep the same, or decide to increase or change as you need to. But making a decision about that in the next 7 days is going to be helpful for me, and I've already made a decision, it's fine, but for others here tonight, it might be a really important thing to kind of reflect on what you've heard tonight, consider your finances, and just take a week. So we'll send an email probably next week to kind of remind you of that 7-day challenge, because we'd love to see that support to continue to grow, not just for the sake of the Purdy's, but actually for us. Isn't it good for our hearts to keep seeking ways to find to be generous and to invest in the things of the kingdom for our own sort of growth and discipleship and generosity? All right, I reckon there's a good point to just turn to prayer. So, Jamie, do you want to...
I'll jump on.
I'll use my technology.
So, what we're going to do is perhaps for 5 or 10 minutes, just spend a bit of time praying together in tables, twos, threes, however you feel comfortable. It's fine if you don't want to pray out loud with others you don't know very well, it's fine. But just for Matt and Ainsley, are there things that we can be joining together in prayer for at the moment? Prayer points, we'll take 5 or 6 prayer points to drop on the screen for everyone and then spend a bit of time praying.
You can start. Yes, I know.
Yes, there's plenty of things to be praying for, I think. I think, like, in terms of the church over there in Chile, for like our home church, please keep praying for the building works, that more people would know Jesus, and this year has been really a year of, like, we've got a lot of new believers, we really need to, like, help them grow in their faith, so pray for ongoing discipleship there as well. For the SEP, we'd love you to be praying for both, well, more workers for the harvest field. Both for students, because there are more pastors needed for the churches, and also for lecturers. So, be praying and considering whether you might answer that prayer as well. No. Please be in prayer that there would be more godly people trained and ready and equipped to go and teach at the SEP as well. That would be excellent. In terms of other things?
Pray for our kids. They're doing so well, they're super resilient. I think, that they can make the most of their time here in Australia and really build up those friendships and with family. Stuff like that. I think, coming and going for them, they love wherever they are, that wherever they are at that time is the best place to be, which is a really great attitude for them to have. But we just really hope that they can make the most of the relationships, building them here so that they can pick back up again in 3 years. But then on the other hand, pray that they can continue to build their friendships and their life in Chile, because that really is home. that really is home for us. So I think it's that like double culture, double life thing for them, for their little hearts as they kind of go back and forth a bit. And then just for us, we've got quite a busy 6 months ahead. You know, we're going to be meeting a lot of people, visiting a lot of churches. It's something we actually really enjoy doing. And so just pray that we will be able to share well about Chile and about the gospel and about mission. Yeah, just, and that we can, do that well, I guess. Is that enough?
That is brilliant. All right, guys. Feel for prayer. So I think Jamie or I will jump up in about 7 minutes or something like that. We'll work it out. You're in safe hands, don't worry. But yeah, just spend some time. Turn to our Heavenly Father who loves to answer our prayers. So spend some time praying together and we'll.
Please do take those prayer points in your minds and hearts. Keep praying in the car on the way home and beyond. I'm going to pray one more time. Heavenly Father, we commit the Purdy family to you, our dear brothers and sisters in Christ. Thank you for raising them up for this work in Chile. Thank you for making them people who love Jesus and are available. Thank you for the people you have touched through the gospel in Chile and for the part you've given Malcolm and Ainsley and their family in that and the part you've given us in that. Please send us out from here encouraged that the gospel is bearing fruit all over the world. Please send us out just moved by love that we have as partners in the gospel to support these guys, to pray for them, to give so that they might be able to continue this great work overseas. And Lord, most of all, please fill our vision with that picture of the last day when we will be there with Jesus, with each other, with the people we've just heard snippets about tonight, and we so look forward to the story swapping that's going to go on in eternity and the joy that's going to bring glory to your Son. So please send us out from here, captured by that vision, to be on mission here or wherever you might put us in the world for Jesus' glory. And we pray in his name. Amen.